Hi, everyone. Welcome to Retro Rewatch, the show where Patrice Brendamore and I, Jeff Gamet, talk about all the shows that she has seen, that I should have seen, but have not. And so we're still in the deep into Stargate SG-1. Mm-hmm. And Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, in the pre-show, we talked a ton about what happened the last week, and I think in both our lives, a lot happened. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff.
Just busy, busy.
Just busy, busy, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'm telling you now also that we haven't recorded in a week, so that maybe, I don't know, do with that information whatever you want to do with it. But I'm good. I'm good. I'm
awesome. Well, I'm glad we're both here because yes. I mean, it's no secret. I really enjoy hanging out with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much fun when we're together. So absolutely. I'm glad we're here.
Absolutely. And I always love talking talking through some of my favorite episodes with you. And this one today is not an exception in that.
Okay. Well, I will tell people a little bit about the episode, and then you'll tell people the interesting things about the episode.
Like that.
So, season 3, episode 20, Maternal Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this is a more Daniel heavy episode.
Yes, the episode where where you said that someone would be doing some actions that are kind of related to some entity, alien entity. So, quite
well. It's. I mean,
to an aggressive alien entity.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and call it and say wrong.
Kind of. You weren't going the right direction. Let's put it this way.
yeah. I was going the right direction, but I got on the wrong train.
Okay, yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
The midnight train to nowhere, I guess.
Right. Yeah. So you have the really interesting information about the episode.
I don't know if it's interesting, but I have some information.
It's more interesting than what I just said.
Okay. So let's do the usual. I have some production notes and some just general notes. So air date for this one, February 25th, 2000 in ye old United States of America. On Showtime, January 10th, 2001, in Germany on RTL2. We have an IMDb rating. We are definitely down, I think, from last week. Didn't we do an 8-point something last week? 7.5. So actually, we are up by 0.1 point.
Oh, okay.
7.6 for this one. So, yeah, solid number, I would say. It's not the best, not the worst, just good solid episode ratings from the people. We have a ton of writing credit for this one. It's basically everybody. Brad Wright, Jonathan Glassner, Robert C. Cooper. All three get credits for this one.
What? Interesting.
Yeah, it's probably cheaper. We have a director, a new director for this one. He is actually a regular SG-1 director of photography. So he steps in the proper directing role this time around. And this is actually the first of 12 episodes. He will direct in SG-1 and in Stargate Atlantis by Peter. I didn't mention the name. Peter F. I have a hard time. What's his last name? Wüste? I want to do it German. Wüste.
I'm looking at it now. And I was going to go with Wost.
Wost. That probably the English-American version. I don't know. My German brain is just doing Wüste. I don't know. It's probably Wost. Yeah, something like that. Would make sense. Yeah. We have, of course, a ton. I don't know if we have a ton of guest stars. We have some guest stars, at least.
We have, from my perspective, some notable guest stars.
Notable and very important guest stars. And one of them is, of course, Tony Amendola. I love him as Master Braytag. He is back. So always funny.
Yes.
Less funny this time around, but still a little bit. We have a actor that you might have recognized. Terry Chen as a monk.
He's
so young in this episode. Most people probably know him from The Expanse most recently. As what was the character's name? He's the scientist.
Ping.
Ah, yes, the scientist. We have another really young face, Aaron Douglas as Boek.
Right. I kept waiting for someone to call him Chief.
Chief, exactly. Chief Tyrell on Battlestar Galactica. Like, very young. Very young in this episode. I mean, it's also Battlestar Galactica was like, what is that? 10 years later? Something like that.
Yeah. That, seriously, he looks like a...
baby face.
Like, a baby, baby face.
Well, baby face Tyrell.
Yeah, him and Terry Chen, they both look like practically teenagers.
That's so true. Yeah. He is by, we have Steve Bacic, I think. I think that is an Eastern European name. Major Coburn, frequent TV star guest. And later we've seen in Andromeda as Geharis Raid or Telemachus Raid. If you know that show, then you know his characters.
I've never seen an episode of Andromeda. Okay.
Maybe we'll watch one just for the fun of it at some point, because it's interesting. What did I call it always? Because the main actor is Hercules. So I called it Hercules in Space.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't remember his name, and he's, I think, quite controversial these days, but I don't remember.
He has become very controversial, and for many people, very disappointing.
Yes, but as I said, Hercules in Space. There is a lot of SG-1 cast on that show, just saying. Like, for example, Michael Shanks shows up and so on. D. Harlan Cutshell as Jaffa Commander. He's a stunt performer, actually. Usually is quite normal almost on SG-1 to see stunt performers step into speaking roles, especially for Jaffa. Kind of makes sense. And we have hard to recognize, but of course you have an actor playing Omar Tissala. And that is Carla Boudreau, Vancouver-born, former model, and this is her only appearance in Stargate.
So many lines.
So many lines. Yes, she doesn't say a word. But she works a lot with her eyes, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so unfortunately, her only appearance... though, I will tell you, I think, not a surprise that Omar Tissala will come back. It's just not her.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why, maybe. Who knows what the decision was at some point. But it's a different actor later. Interesting tidbits. I didn't have too much. I have a German title. Spoilers, of course, you know. It's Harsisis Rettung. So the rescue of the Harsisis.
Holy crap.
Which one... I agree is factually wrong.
I agree as well.
And two spoilers.
Big time.
The only other thing that I didn't want to mention later during the episode is that the Forested Temple world of Cape, so kind of the world, was filmed at Spur 7 Beach in the Lower Seymour Conservation Reserve in North Vancouver. I also read somewhere, but unconfirmed, that the set, it was basically what you would expect, like sheets of wood and like plaster and paint they didn't build buildings. The insides of the temple or whatever, all of that was built at in the studios. So
Yeah, I assumed. Yeah, I assumed the entire interior of the temple was a set and not a location they found.
Yes.
And that the temple courtyard was a set as well. Set.
Yes. Yeah. They just included it later in some shots where they needed it. So yeah. So that's what I wanted to mention for now. There's definitely stuff later.
Okay. Well, then I suppose we should hop into the episode now.
Let's hop through the gate.
All right, which is how the episode starts.
Yes.
The episode starts with, unscheduled gate activation.
Yeah, unscheduled off-world activation.
Thank you, unscheduled off-world activation.
Yes.
And so Hammond orders the iris closed. I still don't get why they don't just leave the iris closed all the time.
Well, yeah, or why he needs to order that, why they can't just automatically close it and be like just close it. Gate dials, just close it. Don't even wait.
Right.
Don't even wait for an order. Like, what if he's not there? Like, do they just wait and be like, should we? Should we do it? I don't know. Maybe?
I don't know. What's going to work best for our plot today?
okay, let's close it. That actually would work.
And it's important that they close the iris so that we can be told that we're getting a GDO code.
Yeah, it's GDO special. They said a GDO special code 2.
Okay, I was going to ask about that because... As far as I know, I've never heard that before in this show.
It's not as far as I remember, but we get a special code 2, which apparently is Braytech.
So I want to know who special code 1 is.
Probably the Tok'ra.
Oh, okay.
I would assume so, at least, that they're number 1. I mean, who knows? Probably Jacob gets code 1.
Okay, that's fair, because, you know, Jacob.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they open the iris, and Braytech comes through with Chief Terrell.
Yes.
And
badly beaten up.
Right. And so everyone rushes in to help, and Braytech says he needs help, and they're going to take everyone to the infirmary. And then Braytech lets us know that Chulak was attacked, which apparently... is something no one was expecting because everyone seems totally shocked.
Yeah, he says it's even more. Chulak was attacked by Apophis.
Right, by Apophis.
Yeah. Which is the key thing. Like they were attacked by Apophis. Little side fact. After Family, this is the second time that Braytech informs Stargate Command that Apophis, whom they believe to be dead, is still alive.
So there's a pattern here.
Yes.
Undead Apophis. Yeah. Everyone thinks Apophis died and Braytech is like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, so that's where our teaser ends.
Yeah.
It's very short. Go to the credits.
It's literally
very short.
Dial in. Braytech is here. Apophis attacked Chulak. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. So it's a setup for apparently what I don't know. I don't think this is actually a setup.
Yeah, that was my question. I was like, okay, what is this teasing? I mean, we have no clue where they're going to take it from there. There's no how intriguing or okay, what's going to happen kind of thing. It's more like okay, sure. Got attacked.
I think this would have had much more impact if this is the first time that we find out that Apophis is alive.
I thought, actually, that's true.
We all knew
because we saw him gate away. That's true. We knew. SGC did not.
SGC could infer, though.
They could guess, but they didn't know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, at least the implication was, at least most recently, was okay, he's dead. Is he? They asked a couple of times. It's like, is he?
You'd think at this point.
Yeah, they would expect
unless, it. Yeah, they should just assume he's alive.
Yeah, I mean, how many times has he supposedly died? Like, this is the third time, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but as I said, we knew because we had seen the end of the Hell Planet where he escaped, like, very clearly.
Right.
So, yeah. We knew. We know. As I said, I didn't know where this was going here. I liked the rest of the episode, but this was kind of weak.
Yeah, it was a very empty setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but that means, since everything is empty after the intro, we have to go where?
We have to go to the exposition room. Correct. So that we can be told what they should have told us in the teaser.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And so what we find out is that Apophis now controls all of Sokar's resources. I mean, his army, everything.
Yeah. 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 And the attack was very, very swift and quick. And Braytak basically couldn't do much except saving Moek.
Mm-hmm. And some, I can't remember who, but someone points out that that while there are traitors to Apophis on Chulak, there are a lot of people that still supported him.
Yeah.
But he's the kind of guy where it's just easier to nuke and pave everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of weeding out the traitors. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Hammond gets a call and Braytak is asked to go down to the OR because, well, I think we can infer it's not going well.
Yeah, Chief Tyrell won't be fixing any more Vipers.
That is true, yeah. Or blowing them up, I don't know.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay, so...
Which also is exactly what happens, because he dies.
Yeah. So... Crap. Hold on. Yeah. Did I forget something where they talked about the fact that it was all ground forces and not just an aerial bombardment?
We're getting to that later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're getting to that later.
Jeff Gambit, far, on brand.
On brand. Yeah. No, we first have to have the scene like Moek and Raytak and they talk briefly and then he dies. So Moek, not Raytak. And then we get a nice conversation between Braytak and Teal'c about the deaths and what Braytak wants to do.
Right, and Braytak gives us a setup.
I have that verbatim because it was really good.
Okay.
So he says, "I'm an old man, Teal'c. One day I wish to spread Moek's ashes on the grave of Apophis. But I do not know if I have the strength to fight anymore." And then Teal'c says, "Many have died, old friend, but the deaths must not go in vain. Word of this must spread to all Jaffa." And this is where we then get what you mentioned.
Okay. Because
he says, "In my 135 years, I've never seen a world turn on those that carry its kind this way. He massacred so many that have worshipped him for him so long." Turns out, he was not... He could have bombarded them, but he sent ground troops, and they kind of figure out that he was looking for something. What?
Yeah. At this point, we don't know.
Yeah. No, they figure it out. Like, they basically, it must be the Hercesis, because...
Oh, I thought they figured that out the next time they went to the exposition room.
No, they are in the they go to the exposition lab next.
Oh, to the exposition lab. Okay, before we hop into the exposition lab.
Yes.
When Braytak is talking about, "I'm old, I'm 135 years old," and all that, I'm like, okay, they're ham-fisting a setup for us. For Braytak.
Yeah, 100%. Yes.
And I'm like, where are the writers that give it to us in a subtle way? We get it every now and then, just often enough to know they can do it.
Yeah.
And yet they ham-fist us. But anyhow, yes. So off to the exposition lab.
Yeah, and this is where we get the reveal that it was the Hersesius because Daniel figured that out. So Teal'c, Freytag and Teal'c weren't sure what they were looking for, but Daniel, of course, knows. He's like, yeah, I mean, of course he's looking for the Hersesius. And then we get the whole spiel of explaining, as I said, exposition lab. Explaining what the Hersesius is and it's forbidden and blah, blah, blah. You know, the whole thing so that everybody knows what it is. For the people who forgot.
They have to give us the Hersesius recap.
Yes.
And then they give us a Keb recap.
Yes. Well, kind of, because we don't know what Keb is. But they kind of still do it because they're like, Daniel says, well, all I know that it is a place called Keb because I think Shuri told him that. And
yes.
And Braytag is like, oh, yeah, of course, I've heard of it. So we get Braytag wiki. And he says, yeah, the old fear and despise camp, they forbade anyone from speaking of it long ago. It is something my father once spoke to me of, an old tale about a place discovered long ago by a few Jaffa and kept secret from the Go'uld. And when they could no longer carry a Primta, they would make their journey to camp where their Clay-Ack would learn the path through darkness into the next life, and when some of the Go'uld finally found out about Keb, they made their way there. They did not return, and it was forbidden to speak of ever again. My father enjoyed telling me this story. The Go'uld truly are all-powerful gods, he would say. How is it they fear anything? This is the Braytag wiki, basically. And then we figure out where that is. Very quickly.
But we also get, I believe it's Teal'c wiki,
mm-hmm.
combined with Daniel wiki, explain what Kalak or Kalak is.
Yeah.
And it's a Jaffa soul.
Yes, basically, yeah. I skipped that. I was like, that's not important. But you're right.
Oh, and yet here I am.
You remember that.
I am the master of unimportant and out of order.
Yes. Should have that on a t-shirt.
I should.
So Daniel is like, oh yeah, all we have is some obscure Earth mythology that indicates Osiris once hid there from Seth. You know? We know those guys.
We know those guys.
Yeah, and then Braytag is like, well, you know, that story is told among Jaffa, is that Osiris hid on one of the planets of the Lochna core. Which conveniently, he knows where those planets are.
Yeah, how convenient.
Yes. So and, a little bit of Daniel, a little bit of Braytag, and we know the location. How convenient.
And now now let's throw in a little bit of Sam.
Yes. So she has a computer. And now
we'll know exactly which address to dial. Yep.
Exactly. Because, yes, we go to the control room, and she has a map, and Braytag's like, it's there, these planets. And Carter is like, hey, you know, one of them is red, which means not in the list of in the Abydos Katush map thingy. So It's not on the official map of the Go'uld. It's not on Go'uld maps.
I'm trying. I'm trying to mash up. I guess make a portmanteau of Go'uld and Google, and it just comes out
Go'uld maps. Yes. So, hey, that must be the place, because, of course, they would not have it on official map, right? It's like the Gulf of America?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that just hurts.
Yes, exactly. Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so back to the exposition room. Of course.
Yeah, because now we have to set up that we're going to send SG-1 with backup.
Yes.
To this planet to check it out.
Yeah.
And so, Daniel gives us another bit of, if I'm remembering my scenes correctly, a bit of ham-fisted foreshadowing. About, I hope we're first.
I think he does. Actually, kind of. He's like, they basically explain everything to Hammond. And Teal'c throws a and Daniel's like, oh, like, world are scared of Cap, so that's why they never mind this planet, so this must be it. And then Teal'c is like, if Amonet thought to hide the Harsesis on Cap, then Apophis will presume so. How that makes sense, I don't know, but, you know, plot has to plot, so.
Plot has to plot. I like that.
Yeah. So Jack is like, maybe scary stories or not, I think he's nuts enough to go, so we should go, but we should also take backup. And Hammond is like, yeah, SG2 will accompany you, and Praetek is, yeah, and I will go as well. And that's when then Daniel says, let's just hope we're first. Yeah, ham-fisted, because of course they're not.
Of course they're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we get to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Which does look strikingly familiar.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen those trees before. Those exact trees I've seen before.
Yeah.
On another planet somewhere. Maybe they're moving those trees. Like, they go through the gates every now and then to another planet, and then they sit there, and they go to another. Who knows?
Maybe when a Stargate kawooshes, it sucks trees through.
That could be. Yes, that would make sense. Maybe, or maybe they're Ents. They're just traveling.
They're Ents. And the Ents, I like this even better. The Ents are traveling from a... maybe the Ents are the Ancients that we've heard of.
Oh, could be. Maybe, yeah, I mean, they are pretty old, so yeah, possible.
Okay, I like this.
Oh, we have a new theory. Yeah, anyway, they come through the gate, looks like everywhere, they find a trail.
And apparently Braytac brought a whole tray of ham. Because he's that ham-fisted.
He's that ham-fisted, yes. He didn't just bring a tray. He brought an entire pig.
Right. He's like, I think I'm gonna be dead pretty soon. And
no,
I
we get
this.
No, 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 no.
Like
skip. You skipped some stuff.
But first,
he ham fists that there must be 8 Jaffa, because he reads the signs. It says, there must be 8 of them.
Oh, right. That's where he one-ups Teal'c.
Yes.
Because they're like standing around looking at nothing, and Teal'c goes, 6 Jaffa came through here.
And he's like, 8. Like,
8.
Yes. And then we go through the forest hiking, and that is when Braytac is like, I'm going to die soon, like when my printer doesn't work anymore, basically. And he might want to die there.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Yeah, and then people, they find more
seriously?
Prints.
Okay, this whole more prints thing.
It's so stupid.
it was just absolutely ridiculous. The whole thing with, they were able to Sherlock Holmes, they meaning Teal'c and especially Braytac, were able to Sherlock Holmes everything that happened.
Yeah, it's like, there were some went away, and then 2 more came back with a woman, and then they made it up again, and there was a struggle, and they headed in the forest, and they were running. And the Braytac is like, the woman must be the priestess interested with the child. I'm like, why?
Because she would be holding the baby, and there's no baby footprints.
Okay. Makes some sense. And then they find 8 barbecued crispy Jaffa.
I was referring to them in my mind as Kentucky Fried Jaffa.
Kentucky Fried Jaffa. I like that. Yes. I mean, yes. Could also be Jaffa fillet.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Popcorn Jaffa.
Yeah. Little Chulox Jaffa BQ.
Jaffa BQ. Jaffa BQ. That's it.
They are
now officially the Jaffa BQ.
Yes. So they're burned to a crisp. Nothing around them is interesting. And also they find a woman shot in the back, which of course is the priestess. So,
but they deduce so much from
exactly.
That. They're totally Sherlocking again.
Yes, again, Sherlock, we have Sherlock Braytac, Master Sherlock.
Yes.
Yes. So the priestess
Which means we now know the gate address for Chulak. It's 221B.
No, exactly. Yes. So Braytag says the priestess was being escorted back to Stargate by two of the Jaffa. When they met the others, she realized she was in danger. She attempted to flee. They chased her and shot her. Then someone or something attacked them. Yes. And the priestess was carrying the child. And how do they know that? Because she was shot in the belly and her hands were not tied.
So obviously she had the baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that the whole thing happened 2 days ago.
How? Because of course they can tell that.
Yes. No idea. Yes. And then they step outside somewhere clearing or something and they see Cape or the temple. Looks nice, I have to say. It's a nice place.
It does look like a nice little resort.
Yes.
I hope the amenities are good.
I hope they have good food. I mean, they have barbecue, so.
Right. No, they have Jaffa barbecue.
Jaffa barbecue, yes, that's true. So, yeah. Unfortunately, right, I cannot eat that, so I'm allergic against that. So, too bad.
Well.
Or do you think they're not mammals? Maybe they're chickens? Who knows?
they might not be mammals. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah.
Jaffa are an alien race.
Yeah, they could be lizards. Well, you know.
Right. So,
snakes. You know, reptiles
maybe we can eat Jaffa.
Yes, reptiles.
Technically, it's not cannibalism.
Yeah, it's true. Technically, it's not.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So off we go to the temple.
To the temple set in the studios. Yeah.
Right, and Jack likes the interior.
Yeah, he's like, well, someone's been reading Martha Stewart.
Right, and then we get this weird interaction with Daniel and Jack because Daniel just starts taking off all of his gear.
Yeah, yes. And Jack is like, what are you doing? And Daniel's like, well, something about this place says we shouldn't rush in there with waving guns around.
And Jack's like, okay, take off your gun. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't say it, but he's like,
whatever. Yeah. So they're going in. Braytag is like, I've come this far, so I'm definitely going in. Jack goes in, and Daniel goes in. And it's a really nice set.
Keeps his gun.
He does keep his gun. It's a really nice set. I have to say, it's really nicely lit. It's like nice, like really artwork on the walls and like all of that. And there is a star-shaped area in the middle. Do you notice anything about that?
The star?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hold on. I can visualize it in my head. It's an eight-pointed star.
Yes. And the eight points.
Oh! You totally spoon-fed it to me. I wouldn't have picked it up without you leading me there.
Yeah.
That's how many points there are on a Stargate for the address.
And they are actually in the exact same positions.
Oh, my God.
So, there's some bonk-bonk on the head there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But you're right. It is a nice, it's a well-done set.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, turns around, and all of a sudden, there is our monk.
Right. Yeah.
Our actor.
I don't know. I keep wanting to call him Monk Ping because of his character from The Expanse.
Yeah, Monk Ping. Let's call him Monk Ping.
Okay.
Yes. So Neil is like, oh, wow, where did you come from? And the monk immediately goes into his spiel of being like, I've been here for some time. And Jack is like, no, you weren't. When we just came in. And he's like, here is everywhere you are.
Yeah. So now we've established that this is going to be the character that speaks very esoterically and in riddles.
Yes. And in riddles, he tells them that he wishes them to take off their boots.
Right.
Which Braytag gets. He is on it. He's like, oh, I think he wants that. And O'Neill's like, yeah, look, we've been walking a ways today, so the monk is like, your journey has only begun. O'Neill is like, I'm just saying, I think I'm doing us all a big favor when I'm keeping these babies on. And the monk is like, when the mind is enlightened, the spirit is free, the body matters not.
Yeah, and, but you know, Jack leaves his shoes on, which is probably for the best. Yes. Daniel and Bray take off theirs.
Yeah, and they sit down in the circle with the monk. And we get more riddles, and I wrote them down or copied them out of the transcript because they're interesting. Because, like, we can read a lot into that, but we never get any explanation. It's like lightning flashes, sparks shower, and one blink of your eyes, you have misseen. I only know a snowflake cannot exist in a storm of fire. The sun is warm, the wind is wild, the grass is green along the shores. Here, no bull can hide. You can make out of that whatever you want. It's interesting.
Well, in retrospect,
some hints.
He's telling them what happened to our Jaffa BQ.
Yes. Yeah, and also that they're basically safe there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a problem. And Daniel figures it out. He's like, Jack, is he speaking in Zen koans? Conans? Koans? Something like that. Whatever theology he follows may be an original basis for Buddhism on Earth.
So, of course, Daniel's all about, look at this anthropology stuff that we're discovering. Yeah. And Jack's like, people, we're on a clock.
Yeah, we have a mission. So let's ask, like, for what we came for here. So they ask for the child. And the monk, of course, is like, there's a child in all of us. And those who seek oneness find all that they seek. Not an answer. And then it's like,
no.
I think it's going to take a while. And Jack is like, really? What gives you that idea? I have to say, I love this episode for this reason. All these riddles and how they're interacting and speaking and all of this, like, it's so fun to watch, like, all those riddles and, like, Jack getting frustrated because usually, you know, he's a smartass and whatever, throwing smartass comments and whatever, but it's totally not working in this context.
Right. And
the monk is Jack, so above him.
Yes. And you're right. Jack is so frustrated.
Yes. Yeah, because usually it's the bad guys or someone else, and they're usually, like, Jack has the upper hand, basically, or at least he pretends he has. But in this context, it's not working. The monk is clearly, doesn't even care, he's centered, like, so, it was really, really good. So, some little things happen outside now. There's a breeze that happens that they all notice, but I think Carter asked Teal'c if he noticed something, and he says no, and I think they all pretend they didn't or are not sure they did. I think Carter saw something in a reflection of, like, a pond. She's not sure.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I had completely forgotten about this whole thing.
But yeah.
As soon as you just said that, I remember.
Yeah.
Okay, so Teal'c is standing at the edge of this little pool in the courtyard.
Yeah.
They feel the breeze. Teal'c is looking down, and he sees the purple ethereal shimmer go through the water.
Yeah.
And
or a reflection. It looks more like it's not going through the water. It's like a reflection that's going, like, through somewhere. But anyway, you see something streaking through.
Right. Yeah. And then Sam asks him, what's going on? Do you see something? Whatever, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And Teal'c's like, no.
Yeah, but in hindsight, we know something happened, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then Jack comes outside and he tells them about, and I quote, the monk guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not much else happens outside. It's like, okay. Inside, it's getting a little bit more interesting. So, the monk is suggesting that Braytek removes his junior, his symbiote, because he says words cannot express things, speech cannot convey the spirit, swayed by words one is lost, one cannot carry darkness, on the great path. When the mind is freed, the body is no longer required. I sense you're not ready to meet Omar Desala.
So what I took away from all this was the stories that Brit Tak had been told as a child were real.
Yes.
And Jaffa could come here. They would be freed from their Gu'old.
Yeah. When they were ready to die or had already been freed. They could basically die there. Yeah. What I liked, I mean, before it's quite ham-fisted, but also understandable. I mean, Brit Tak is quite old, right? He's under 35, he says. Mm-hmm. And you can see that someone would think, okay, maybe I'm ready to die. Like, I mean, he mentions that he like soon will die. Like his Gu'old will simply, like, I don't know, mature and leave, and then he will not be able to get another one, so he will die. So I think he's dealing with that and is ready for that. And until now, he was like, I mean, I'm here. Maybe I should die here. I mean, this seems to be the place. Mm-hmm. And this is the point where he realizes that he's not ready.
Yes.
Like, he thought he was. But when it comes to it, I mean, I think he feels there's something real here and that he could get, like, that the story, as you said, the stories are real and that he could go where he wanted to go, but he realizes he's not ready.
Now, yes. And what happens here and with his conversation with Teal'c after this, I really like what went down because they've given me the whole ham-fisted setup.
Yes.
And now they change it to, actually he's not going to die, but we could still have a twist where he ends up dying in battle in this episode.
Yeah, could, but I don't think so. No,
but, yeah, but
I really like that. That I mean, it's so relatable for, like, I think so for people a certain age to say, like, yeah, maybe I'm ready to die. You know, it could happen any day. And then to realize for him to say, I'm not ready. He feels it. He's like, okay, now that he's faced with that decision, he's like, I'm not ready. But I take solace in the fact that journey is ahead of me. So he's like, I'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, and with that, he steps out. Like, he's like, I mean, and I like that. I mean, it's basically for him to realize, I mean, after everything that happened, he basically lost his planet, more or less. Friends, family, all of that. He's been fighting his entire life, and he is ending. He's nearing the end of his life, and to say, I mean, it would be easy to say, okay, this is it. And he realizes, he doesn't say so, but I think he realizes that he still has something to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
What he said earlier about wanting to put the ashes of what was his name, Morak.
Yes.
On Apophis' grave, right? That is the thing he wants to fight for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the point where he realizes it. So I said, he steps out. Like, he's like, okay, I'm out.
Yeah. Peace out, bro.
Yeah, peace out, bro. And we get that explanation from him in a second. By the way, really good music in this situation. It's really well done.
I didn't pay close attention to the music.
It was amazing.
But I was feeling the strong emotions of the scene.
Yeah.
Not like I was sitting there crying or anything. Yeah,
but you could feel the strong emotions of it.
So clearly the music was doing its job, even though I wasn't focusing on that.
Yeah. So he steps outside and we get that music, and then he talks to Teal'c, and it's like, and he's like, I am not ready yet to give up. I feel alive, Teal'c, like a young man of 80.
Right. I want to point out something in here.
And he says, we still have false gods to slay.
Yeah. So I love that whole interaction. Yeah. But we learned something about Jaffa armor and wardrobes.
Yeah.
They wore polyester socks.
Yes. Yes.
Because when Brit Tak walks out, he's carrying his boots.
Yeah.
And his socks look like they came from JCPenney's.
Yeah, they probably did come from JCPenney's. I mean, in real world, probably that's where they bought them from.
It's probably the socks he had on when he showed up for makeup that day.
That is actually probably very likely.
So they're lucky they didn't have like, I don't know, like bumblebees or unicorns or smiley faces all over them.
Little doggies, I don't know.
Little doggies.
Yeah. So we go back inside.
Yeah, and now we get Daniel Wiki.
Daniel Wiki. Kind of. We go deeper, and I like this kind of. So they start reading things on the wall, and Daniel's like, the Sala, nature, Mother Nature. We're talking about Mother Nature, and like he explains it. I think we're getting to the meat of the situation. Like the monk is mm-hmm. like now he's with Daniel, and I think he figured out, okay, like I think he knows what Daniel wants. So he starts to ask questions and not talk in riddles. Not as much anyway. Mm-hmm. He still does, but not as much. And he's like you're looking for his child and why, and like, do you think you can protect him? And Daniel is like, yeah, of course. And the monk says, and this is, I think, the most important phrase in this whole thing, and it will come back later, so remember that one. Because it is so clear, it takes a longer time to realize it. If you immediately know the candlelight is fire, then the meal was cooked a long time ago. And I think Daniel and everybody is like, I have no idea what she's talking about.
But when Daniel gets it, he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yes. But that doesn't happen yet.
That doesn't happen yet, yeah. So we do some more meditation, and Daniel's trying to light a candle.
With his mind?
Yeah, with his mind. And then the monk keeps asking questions. It's like, you say you seek the child to fulfill the promise. Is there another reason? And then it's honest. It's like, yeah, the child has knowledge. He can help my people defend themselves against an evil enemy, the Goa'uld. And the monk is like, you hate the Goa'uld. And then it's like, Goa'uld are responsible for the death of my wife, amongst millions and millions of other people. How can I not hate them? And the monk is like, your hate will lead to the child's death. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
He is right. Like that, especially hate, strong emotions like that will probably lead to people close to you dying because you don't know, like you don't pay attention. You don't do what's best for them.
But then we get a line.
Is that down?
In the moments, like, oh, yeah. That's so heady. And at the end of the episode, it's like, oh, bonk, bonk on the head.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is where the monk wants Daniel to blow out the candle with his mind. Daniel thinks it's a trick candle. The monk has him put his hand over the fire to feel that real.
He's supposed to light the candle and he can't. And then the monk lights it. And he says like, oh, it's a trick candle. never mind. First he wants Daniel to blow it out. And he does like normal people. And he's like, with your mind. And then he lights it again. And Daniel thinks it's the trick candle. And he says like, oh yeah, put your hand over it. And he just does, and of course gets burned.
Right, and then they have a whole discussion about trust.
Yeah, and he's like, the monk is like, within you is the capacity for trust. Trust, O Matisala. Do not believe you can light the candle. Believe she can light the candle. Right?
Right, which later on becomes bonk bonk on the head.
Yeah, but kind of makes sense, right? It is mm-hmm. It is important that you trust other people. And he does, right? So that shows that he trusts the monk, but also the monk that he can trust him. So Jack comes in and he's of course super excited because Jack is like, okay, it's getting dark and it's time, like we have to move on.
Right, so clearly some time has passed.
Yeah. And then it's like, Jack, there are just markings on the wall, and it's a Bible, and it's more, or actually more, it's an instruction book, and you can reach it at this ethereal plane of existence, some kind of other world, and it's only natural that Jafar, who found this place, would have interpreted it as a passage to the afterlife, and Jack says, whoa, slow down there, grasshopper.
I laughed at that because I got the reference.
You did?
It's from an old TV show called Kung Fu.
Correct. It's the nickname of David Carradine's character in Kung Fu.
I've seen reruns.
Yes.
Of all the rando shows for me to... this one.
That one you got. Then it's like, I'm pretty sure this place was built by an alien race a millennia ago. They may have even visited Earth and inspired the mythologies surrounding the concept of Mother Nature in various cultures. So Jack is like, so this guy is an alien? And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure the aliens discovered a means by which they could ascend to some higher plane of existence and went there, whatever that is. But they left their writings in a shrine as a kind of map for others who wanted to follow them. The monk is someone who has taken up curatorship. So kind of a guide.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel shows Jack that he can light the candle with his mind. Which is not super impressive for Jack.
Right.
Yeah, and then Jack takes Daniel aside, and they argue about this. It's taking too long, and Jack's like, I'm this close to just taking everybody and searching this compound.
And Daniel's like, yeah, not a good idea.
Yeah.
And he makes Jack's gun float.
Exactly. And in some edits, you can see the wires.
Some shots. I didn't catch that, but it was obvious to me that it was a practical effect with gun-on-wires.
The way it was floating was so clearly, there's two on each, one on each side, and they're kind of holding it up.
I mean, it was painfully obvious what I was seeing, even though I couldn't actually see the wires.
Yeah, and that seems to convince Jack. It's like he turns to the monk, and he could teach me how to light candles and move stuff around by thinking. And the monk is like, of course, cryptic as always, he's like, I cannot teach you what you already know. And Jack is like, well, I think, I don't think I know as much as you think I know.
Which I thought was actually a very funny line.
Yes, and then the monk is like, you must come to know Oma Tisana, become her friend. Didn't Jack say something about he doesn't have a lot of friends? I think something like that.
something like that.
Yeah.
yeah. So, but.
Yeah. No, he says that you're a friend, like, because we hear some sounds from the outside. Because now, out of time, we're hearing gliders coming.
Right. And,
They radio SG2.
Right, which is actually surprising because usually the backup team at the gate dies. Mm-hmm.
First, that's true. They get shot up and disappear or something. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, the second Stargate team, they're like the red shirts.
That's true.
Stargate SG1.
Yeah, how many? That's actually a good question. How many team members did they have to replace because of that? Like, basically every mission they lost another team and they're like, we have to replace the red shirts again.
Yeah. You know, you'd think all those people that were annoyed that they didn't get picked for the first round, that went off to work with
the NID.
They could have just waited around like a week, and they would have been on a team.
Yeah, that's true, and didn't get shot. So
okay, next thing that happens, I have a problem with.
Okay. Yes.
Which is, Jack orders Sam to lay claymores. Okay, those are mines. Landmines.
Aren't those like directed mines, as far as I remember? Like they're...
Oh, I don't know.
Directed explosives.
But where in the world did they keep all those?
In their backpacks, I guess. They, of course, took a bunch of them because they knew that they would, for the plot, need them.
I guess. And they have bags that
Yeah, they also
they
have
got
bags
from Mary
full
Poppins.
Of, yeah, and they also have bags like with C4 just in case they need to blow up a ship. And, you know, everybody's carrying a different bag so that they have different options. Like, oh, today is a day where we need C4. But not enough.
Well, good news.
Because, because we had to carry the claymores that are now useless.
Right, yeah. So, anyhow, they set up all these claymores and, yeah. And then we find out that the Jaffa have landed one of their big motherships.
Yeah, I think Teal'c and Braytak get sent out to do a scouting mission real quick. And yeah, you see a gold encampment, they've landed a mothership, yes.
And there are a lot of soldiers.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, then we go back inside the temple. Jack is still there. No, is it Carter now? No, Carter comes in.
Carter comes in.
And so, of course, the monkey, Daniel has to perform another trick for her.
But this time he makes it pretty grand. And it's like a 5 foot
tall fire
pillar.
He makes a big
fire
out of nothing. Yeah. There's no candle or whatever. And she's like, and he's like, it's not just fire. All the instructions are here on the walls. All you have to do is be willing to learn and believe. Which, of course, Carter doesn't. She's like, I don't know, but under different circumstances, I would bring the right equipment and check for some kind of concealed technology before I assumed. Like, but Daniel, of course, immediately is.
But Daniel's like, look, I've got this power now.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm like, oh, come on. Yeah. What they have to do by the end of this episode is make the powers not a thing for Daniel.
Yeah. Of course.
Because the idea that we now have
people
Daniel the superhero for the rest of the series is not going to work.
On the plus side, he finally would have something useful to do. Because so far, he's been completely useless. I mean, up until this episode.
So they could have to spend a night on an alien planet, and then Jack has Daniel light the campfires.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? But Daniel has a small point. He's like, isn't there the smallest part of you that wants to believe a person can reach a higher level? Which, remember that? I think that is the key thing we should talk about after this episode. So Carter says, yeah, of course. And he's like, see, I have that power. To do what? Carter says. And he says, to protect the child. I think she doesn't want me to leave until she knows I understand how to protect him. So, of course, it's all about him and his powers.
Of course.
Yes. So, but, well, we can't continue this because now the Gewold are approaching with 2,000 troops. I don't know how they count it.
Jaffa can count really fast.
Yeah, I guess Braytak can count really fast. I mean, he counted to 8 really fast, so who knows?
Right.
So they rush out, while Daniel sees a glowing something hover down to him.
They did, if you watch closely, they did kind of a cool effect, because as it's coming down towards him, you can actually see the flowing body reflected in his glasses.
In his glasses. It's really nicely done. I mean, that was a really good effect to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't see that yet, the body. We just see the reflection. The Jaffa approaching basically outside, and then we go back in. And we see it's a glowing figure. It's like kind of a glowing body shape, but she has a face. I guess it's a she. Looks like a she.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we know it's an actress. So she leads him through a wall that looked like a solid wall, but Daniel can step through, and that's where the boy is.
And
Braytak and Jack want to go, but Daniel is nowhere to be found. So they're like, shit.
Yeah, so Jack ends up having to tell SG2, get back through the gate and get back up.
Yeah.
We're pinned down now.
Yeah, and he says, a lot of backup. And then he says, and if we happen to make it out of this in one piece, remind me to harm Daniel severely.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's clear Jack is really not happy.
No.
But
I understand
he's
that.
Also not willing to just leave someone behind.
Yes. Yes. And I understand that. I mean, he's kind of, yeah, they're really in danger, and Daniel's kind of not thinking about that.
Yeah. So, but now we go back to Daniel.
Yeah. So he has the boy in his arms, and we get a really nice scene. It's without saying a word. Isabella doesn't, like, he does, of course, talk, but she doesn't. So he has the boy in his arms, and then he says to her, "Thank you, he'll be safe with me." And he wants to go, and she just looks at him, I think also a little bit sad.
Mm-hmm.
And he realizes, he's like, "I didn't do any of it, did I? It was you. I was wrong. I don't have any powers at all. You do. You were showing them to me. That's how you communicate with us. You were trying to tell me the boy is better off here with you. And I wasn't listening." Yeah, exactly. He was neither listening to the monk nor to his friends. He wanted right. these powers. He wanted to learn that. He wanted to ascend and wanted to protect the boy and didn't think.
But then finally, he realized, oh, bonk, yeah. bonk on the head.
Yes. So he says, "I made a promise." And he puts the baby back in the crib and lays it down. "And I promised he would be safe." And he realizes, well, he is safe with her.
Mm-hmm.
Not with him.
And then she smiles a little bit.
Yeah, she smiles a little bit. Okay, she's like, good. "Oh, finally, you got it. You're not as dumb as you look." Yes, it's
not bad for a mostly hairless primate.
Yes, exactly. So we go back outside, and the Jaffa have arrived, and they step into the courtyard, and the monk is there, finally, suddenly, and he's mm-hmm. like, "You're not welcome here." And we get like thunder and dark clouds popping up, and we're like, "Oh." You know what happened before. We can guess what happened before. But the Jaffa, basically, he orders the monk, he orders the Jaffa to kill the monk, and he gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets killed. And Daniel asks Jack to drop their weapons.
Oh, right. Like, Daniel he steps outside. Out.
He comes out, and he's basically... you should drop your weapons. And I think at first the team thinks like he meant the Jaffa, but he's like, no, I meant us. And he's like, "Jack, I was wrong. I was very wrong." Finally, he realizes that one of those aliens I thought was long gone is still here. "Jack, if you're ever going to trust me on anything, now is the time. The alien is the one with all the powers, and she is not someone you want to fool with, if you get my drift." And Braytag is like, "Yeah, we should probably do that."
Yeah. It's interesting. Braytag and Teal'c, they're like immediately, yep, they set down their mm-hmm. their staff weapons.
Yeah.
Jack and Sam are more reticent as they set down their guns.
Yeah, yeah, but they do.
But they do.
Yeah, and then the head Jaffa says, "Oh, kill them."
And Daniel gets his best line of the episode.
No, not yet. Basically, what happens is like the bands start, and then they get absorbed by an energy band that zips around, and then Daniel mm-hmm. says bye.
Yeah.
To them, kind of smiling, and then lightning kills them all and blows up the gliders as well.
And the lightning effect. When all the Jaffabecue happens in the courtyard, it so reminded me of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes,
when yes. all the yes. Nazis get killed.
Yes, that is exactly. I think that is exactly what they were going for.
Oh well, it worked.
It did work. Yeah, that is exactly. I didn't write that down, but I read that somewhere. And then all of a sudden, we see an energy being come out of the dead monk's body. You know, like the one before. Mm-hmm. And then Oma comes out with the baby in her arms, kind of. hard to tell if she has arms or not, but somehow, I guess, yes. You know, energy yeah. arms, I guess.
Her energy arms, yes. Yes,
it's like Red Bull arms. And Daniel is like... Daniel realizes what's happening. He's like, you're leaving. You know that more will come as long as they know the boy is here. And he's like, I'll see both of you again someday, right?
And she doesn't say.
She doesn't say anything, but she touches Daniel's face, like caresses it almost a little bit, and then she just floats away. And Jack is like, I thought we needed that kid. We're just gonna let her... And he's like, no choice, huh?
And Daniel's like, yeah.
Yeah. And at that point, Coburn comes back with reinforcements. But the Stargate activates and they're seeing a bright light approaching. And Jack is like, you know what? Like, stand down. In fact, just lay down all your weapons. Do not engage. Do not do nothing. Just let that energy pass through the gate.
And they do.
And they do. And it leaves. And the final scene is like, I like that. Jack is like, Jack is to Daniel. He's like, you're all right. And Daniel's like, yeah. Jack is like, let's go home. And they start to leave the temple grounds. And then Jack is like, Daniel. Daniel's kind of a little bit dazed. And he's like, yeah. And Jack is like, shoes.
And Daniel's like, oh. And it turns around almost like, oh, crap. Yeah, yeah. Right. Shoes.
Yeah, shoes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that is the end of this episode.
So overall, I think I did a pretty good job of keeping stuff in the right order.
You did more or less. It also wasn't super complicated. I mean, other than the right. courtyard and inside, where basically not a lot happens on the courtyard and it's mostly the inside.
Yeah, it wasn't even like we had a real AB story. It's more like we had an A and a half story.
A and a half. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what did you think, Patrice?
I think I hinted at it at the beginning. I love this episode. It might not sound like it because on the surface it doesn't look like it's a deep and important episode. But I think because I know what comes out of all of this beginning, of this very humble beginning of a story, what strands get woven from here on out. I love that story. There's so many interesting concepts in this one, like the whole thing of enlightenment, of ascension, ascending to a higher plane of existence, of maybe the end of your life is not the end of your life. If you wanted to. Becoming more than you are. That sometimes someone else, or like having someone stay with someone else, someone that you love, stay your loved one, basically, or a baby or something, stay with someone else is safer than staying with you or staying in a dangerous situation in general, even though it's hard.
Yeah. Okay, that's a really good point that... It's been bouncing around in my head, but I wasn't able to put words to it till just now.
Yeah.
Daniel made a promise to Cherie that he took very, very seriously.
Yeah.
And for him to get to the point where he realized the best way he can protect this child is to not be the protector.
Yes.
That's a huge, huge
That's massive.
Leap for him.
Yeah, that is massive. And it's not what he expected. I think it's not what anybody would expect in that situation. But that is, at the end, like the best decision. And I think, as I said, that is super interesting. We get, there's an ancient race we haven't heard of that might have been on Earth. Right? Mm-hmm. That we heard here. We have just seen two of them, apparently, or at least Daniel thinks so. We'll see what happens with that. But Daniel thinks so. Those were two advanced, ascended aliens that from another race. So
that was cool.
Yeah.
But it raises another question for me.
Okay.
Was the monk from that race, or do you become that by ascending?
Yeah, I mean, so that we don't
from
know.
Any race.
That we don't know. I mean, it's not clear. Maybe by getting killed in this enlightened state that he was in, he basically shed his mortal body and ascended. Or maybe he was ascended already and the body was just a vessel that he temporarily occupied or lived in or had.
I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, it's not clear. It's not at all clear whether the monk is an alien or not. Maybe there's also, like, who says there's only one race of ascended beings? Maybe there's, like, all kinds. Like, we don't know. Like, maybe they're coming from, I mean, you would assume because there's multiple races that there could be a lot of ascended beings, right? All of them, or some of them, like, from all kinds of places, eventually figured out and ascended to a higher plane of existence. Like, who knows? Like, we don't know. It's not, I mean, there's no word other than what Daniel reads and says, no word is spoken. And what the monk tries to say.
Yeah, but what the monk is saying is really targeted towards giving Daniel a message.
Yes, exactly. Like, but there is. I think. I mean, I found that really interesting. I think there is deeper meaning in what the monk says. But you need the right frame of context and the right mindset and the right understanding to understand what he's saying. Right. Otherwise, it's just gibberish.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the whole thing with the flame and the candle and that the meal was cooked a long time ago, that's probably a metaphysical space-time topic of some sort. But we don't know. We don't have the context to understand it yet. Maybe at some future date we will.
Maybe. It's so for me, part of what we were hearing needed Jack to not understand.
Yes.
I think that really was an important part of this.
Yes.
Because his mind was not open to hearing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so it needed to be nonsense words to him.
Yeah, of course, exactly. Because this, if you're not ready, if you're not open, then you will not understand it. Yeah. So as I said, there's a whole thing we could unpack here about all of that. And for that reason, I really like this episode. It is an interesting story. The whole Jafar thing and the danger there is kind of like, yeah, okay, a little sideshow. It's kind of more to illustrate the danger to the baby, to the kid, than to really be dangerous. It's more, I mean, look what Apophis is willing to throw at this planet, at like finding this. I mean, he just killed basically Chulak. He just dumped like an entire ship full of people on this planet and all to find one baby. So it's not about the risk or the danger to SGC, though. That is plays a role, right? Because I mean, you can spin that and continue and say, okay, that baby goes with Daniel, goes to Earth. I mean, what's going to happen? Apophis is going to attack with Sokar's fleet, Earth.
Yeah. Yes, and his attack would be unrelenting.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, no chance in hell for Earth. Like, it's not two ships. So, I mean, he has the biggest fleet ever. So,
yeah, and I just realized something based on what you're saying. Apophis has no idea that SG-1 was on the planet, and he won't know because my assumption is that when the ascended beings went all Jafabecue mode,
they killed everybody.
It wasn't just the one. Yeah, it was everyone.
They killed everybody. Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And their ship was destroyed too.
Yeah, exactly. So all Apophis knows is that on that planet the ship was destroyed. So he will probably send more, but then there will be nobody, and then he will figure out that it's gone. Basically, that's all he will know. He will not know that SGC was there.
Yeah, which is good for SGC because that won't lead Apophis back to Earth to not find the baby.
Yeah, exactly. So as I said, like that's that for that for all those reasons, I really like this episode. It's just I remember this vividly. It is a really good, really interesting episode. Very intriguing. The whole mysticism and Buddhism and all of this ascended things. Just super interesting.
I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was as good as some other episodes we've seen.
Oh, yeah,
I definitely enjoyed
it. There's definitely better. We've definitely had better episodes. Like, not good. I'm not saying this is the best episode ever.
When it ended, I felt like maybe they had given us a setup for Braytac being out of the show at some point. And they may have just wrapped up the Harsesis storyline because he's now safe with someone else, or maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, I think both are good options, right? I mean, Braytac basically now could at any point, we could be like, oh yeah, and like he's now end of life, right? If he ever runs out or he dies accidentally, like I said, no, he dies like unexpectedly, not accidentally. Hopefully not accidentally. He dies unexpectedly or anything happens. He could leave now. And that would be a convenient explanation that you can reference.
Right. So I felt like they gave us an episode that could be a wrap up for a storyline. But open enough that if they decide they want to come back to the Harsesis thing later.
Yeah.
They have a way they can do it because he's with the...
Yeah.
Do we even... I keep saying he. Do we know if it's a boy?
It's a boy, yes. We got that. Okay. We got that information, yes.
That must be why I keep calling it a he.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And... But yeah, the mysticism, I thought that was really interesting because now we are going into topics that aren't typical for SG-1. Overall, it felt like a very simple episode in many ways too.
Yeah, with
some ridiculous stuff, like when they go Sherlock Holmes, it's like, really, you got all that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So anyhow, the next big question is, how many chevrons?
I thought about that for a brief second. I'm actually on the fence. Because on one hand, I like it a lot. It's a 7. On the other hand, I have a small problem about the ending. Where I'm like, it's kind of anticlimactic, almost. Weird how this whole thing with Daniel and his little, like, all over the place ends. Kind of. The opener and the closing are kind of strange.
So I have almost, a hypothesis.
I almost want to ding it for that, but I think I'm gonna give it a 7 still. I'm gonna ignore those two parts and say I liked it, so it's a 7.
Okay. Super fast, my hypothesis.
Okay.
They had the middle of the story.
Yeah.
The core. They knew what they wanted to
clearly.
Do.
And then they were like, oh, how do we get into it and how do we get out of it?
Exactly.
Yes.
And they're like, this and this. Yeah. And we're done.
Yeah, in as few seconds as possible because we need as much time as possible for the middle.
Right. For me, before we started recording today, I knew what my chevrons were. And I was curious if you're going to sway me.
Okay.
I know I've said this before. Yeah. You did not.
Okay,
This is a very solid 6 for me.
Okay, yeah.
I enjoyed the episode. It was well done, but it wasn't that special for me.
Yeah. No, I can totally see that. Like, it is absolutely a solid, for me, it would be a solid 6. Like, it jumped over to a 7, but it is definitely a solid 6. So I'm not arguing against that.
Yeah. And it does bring up a pattern that may not exist, but I feel it does. If you have an episode where Sam is doing a lot, then Daniel doesn't.
Yes.
If Daniel's doing a lot, then Sam doesn't.
True. Sam did nothing.
She was Daniel in this episode.
Yeah, she put claymores and asked one question and was not impressed with Daniel's parlor tricks, and that was it.
Right, and she explained what the cartouche database.
Yeah.
And that was it.
So that means we're getting now to the penultimate episode of season 3.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
Well.
Yeah. You wanna know the title?
I do, because I'm sure I will have a prediction.
And I'll give you the German title, because it's exactly like the English title.
Okay.
So no spoilers. It's in German, it's Der Kristallschädel, the Crystal Skull. Or just Crystal Skull, actually.
The Crystal Skull.
Yes.
Oh, no. They're totally doing an Indiana Jones episode.
Okay.
The Crystal Skull is going to be a literal thing. It's an artifact. And then it's going to turn out to have some other use. They are straight up doing an Indiana Jones episode.
Yeah, written down. Yeah, will be interesting to see if you're right.
My concern is it's going to kind of suck.
Yeah, Michael Greenberg and Jared Paul, story credit, teleplay, Brad Wright, directed by Brad Turner. So, just saying.
Okay. Well,
and then, IMDb rating will be a 8.0.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
We'll see whether we agree with that or not.
Yeah, there have been times where we have not agreed with the IMDb rating.
Actually.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of times.
Okay, we should wrap up.
Yes, we should.
Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, with you almost every week on the British Tech Network, Big Show Thursdays, Mac Show Fridays, we talk about tech. And everything I'm doing, social media links, podcast projects, soon a couple links to the talk I have just done at the Matrix conference on my website, thepatrice.com, also on LinkedIn if you want. Links are all on my website. So awesome. How about you?
Jay Gambit on the social medias, most active on Blue Sky, Mastodon, and PixelFed.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a couple shows, because you've already mentioned some. The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin and In Touch with iOS, David Ginsberg show.
Yeah.
There's others, but that's enough for now. And then where we can be found for the show, mm-hmm. we have an email, hello@retrorewatch.com.
Yep.
Mastodon Retro Rewatch at Tech Hangout. .social.
Correct.
And then at retrorewatch.com on Blue Sky. Did I get all this stuff?
You got it all.
Come on.
Perfect.
Awesome.
The meal has been cooked a long time ago. I can tell you that.
It way long. Yep. Okay, so with that, it is time to close the iris.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the embarkation room and move back over to the couch. And watch Stargate SG-1 and the Crystal Skull. Dun, 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 dun.
Yes. All right.
Yeah.
See you soon.
All right. So with that, bye, everyone. See you next time.